Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 9th of February. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And how is life treating you, Kev, down in Cape Town this week? Some good meetings down there?
Yeah, I've had some great meetings. It's been very hard. It's like mid-20s and sunny. It was windy yesterday, which was terrible. It's been very nice. Been in the swimming pool a couple of times.
Yeah, but no, we're talking about work. How was work? Forget the leisure. You know,
work was just worked around the enjoyment, the pleasure. No, Cape Town at this time of the year is a beautiful place, but no, work was good. The Indaba was a bit slower, I have to say. This is the third year I've been. Not as many people about. And sort of everybody's saying that. I don't know whether everybody's already got their projects and maybe, you know, just cracking on with them rather than going to Indaba. But as you'll hear today, had some good conversations with Colin. Didn't actually catch up with Leon, but he was here for a brief day on the Monday. Tried to catch up with Sovereign Metals and Sapan, but we failed. So we said we will try and catch him next week when he's back in the UK. Had a meeting with the Aterian guys, Charles and Simon. Sure, and actually, I watched Liverpool versus Spurs, and Charles is a Spurs fan, so the less said about that, the better for him anyway. I was cheering in his house on a big screen, so that was good fun. So, yeah, I think plenty is still going on, and there is obviously from the discussions I've had with different people, both some finance directors and some CEOs, it's been interesting, and things are moving at a pace, even though maybe we don't really see it. Okay. And I think all the talk is about Trump as well, and you know what he's doing in terms of the metals and the critical metals. I mean, what a palaver has been going on here. Yeah. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, let's have a look at some of the news stories. I mean, there's really only one news story that's dominated the headlines this week, and I'd say that's probably global, not just the UK. And obviously, quite the headline, yeah, President Trump recently proposed to turn Gaza into what he called the Riviera of the Middle East. You know, I think as Colin Bird summed it up, as the Dubai of the Middle East or the Dubai of the Mediterranean, suggesting the US would actually take over and redevelop the area. The idea has obviously sparked a lot of discussion and controversy. Critics arguing it's unrealistic and insensitive, given the ongoing conflicts and obviously humanitarian issues at Gaza, while some supporters see it as an audacious plan for peace and development. I mean, the first question that I got on my mind is kind of, you know, where are the 2.2 million Palestinians meant to go? Some people, you know, perhaps many of the Palestinians in Gaza might be tempted to get out if they had the chance. But even if they say, you know, if they had a million left, you know, as many as 1.2 million others would still be there. Presumably the United States and new owners of this Trump's Riviera would have to, you know, use force to remove them. So, and after America's catastrophic intervention we've seen in the past in Iraq in 2003, you know, that would probably be very, you know, deeply unpopular in the US. So what are your thoughts on the whole relocating of Palestinians, which, you know, to countries like Egypt or Jordan, which obviously have been talked about, with them coming out and saying, condemning it? Obviously, they don't want to bring in kind of sort of Hamas and terrorist factions into the country. And this is drawing parallels to the displacement of Jews faced post-World War II. You know, this is effectively ethnic cleansing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a non-starter. I mean, if it wasn't so sick, it would be funny. Yeah. It would be like amusing. It's the type of thing that you might see on Saturday Night Live as somebody just making a sketch up.
You say it's a non-starter, Kev. I've got the headlines here, and again, this is you know, UK papers, but it's the headline is Trump digs in on Gaza takeover. President restates the Palestinian resettlement plan after aides appeared to backtrack. Israel pushes for mass relocation of Gazans despite fears plans put hostages at risk. So already he's not rowing back on it. He's actually pushing it further.
Yeah, well, it's a bizarre situation, and I think he's going to turn the whole Muslim world against him, never mind the Gazans themselves. It's, you know, they've been there for thousands of years. You know, get a grip here. You know, this all only kicked off when Israel decided they wanted its own place in the 1920s, last century. You know, probably 100 years ago. Really all started from Zionism in the late 19th century, 1890 or something like that it was. I mean, this is not like This is a very new thing, if you know what I mean. And the
Yeah.
Nakba, which happened in
Well, yeah,
1948,
1948, 48 was the Nakba, so.
1948, when 750,000 Palestinians were basically told to move, and they had to move. And those people have now become 3 or 4 million people. And if you know anything about Palestinians, there's probably another 3 to 5 million Palestinians all over the world as well, maybe
Yeah.
more. You know, so I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense. And all this Mexico of 25%, Canada 25% as well. I understand the theatrics of what he's trying to do. Like, I'm in charge, and you know, I'm going to bully my way to what is good for America. But he's not using any diplomacy whatsoever, as he's just like a hammer to crack a nut situation. And the markets, if we bring it back to that, just don't have a clue what's going on, do they?
The
And especially
dollar,
in
I mean, the VIX and the dollar has gone ballistic. It's all time, you know, it's crazy times, isn't it, on the VIX? If you look at the dollar, it's just strengthened it.
it's strengthened, but then it's weakened again. So it's like, who knows? And then we look at the precious metals. It seems to be that over the last 12 months, there's been a real movement of gold into the national banks, if you like, and especially into the US National Bank. Why are they collecting gold like there's no tomorrow? And silver, I mean, you were looking at something yesterday that you sent me that you know, there's a big short position on that SVL ETF, I think, which is a physical silver ETF. They don't have the silver to back it by the looks of things. So if they don't have the silver to the back it, then they've got to go out into the market and buy it. So what's going to happen to physical silver? I mean, it's massively behind now. It's in the 90s in terms of, you know, its ratio to the price of gold since we've seen gold
Yes.
go to 2850. So yeah, I said to you a few days ago, even before this happened, that I can see silver $75 an ounce within the next 12 to 18 months, and maybe even higher than that, on a spike. It's only happened two or three times in the last 20 odd years, 25, 30 years, where this same setup has occurred, and it's silver has done between 4 and 6 times the initial price. And if we say the initial price on silver was about $13 an ounce, you know, a few years ago, 3, 4 years ago, then 6 times this
Man, I
is
remember during 2020, during COVID, when everybody was buying physical silver, including myself, it was like, you know, $15, $13 an ounce, 12, and then it went up to 20. And when it broke through 20, it was a real big thing. And then it's obviously bust through the 30s. And I think I've been looking on silver bullion websites just to get a feel. I think I sent you some pictures of some actual physical kilogram bars. And you know, even coins now, like your Canadian maple silver, your silver Britannia coins, which you know, you really are your you know, the most popular, seen as the best coins to buy. They're in the £35 now, not dollars, because of, you know, and because demand is there. Like, literally everybody wants to hold either physical silver or physical gold, and that's the problem that they've got on these ETFs. As I was sending you, this SLV ETF, 10 times borrowing fee on it now compared to yesterday. It's
And that's
crazy.
£35 plus VAT on silver as well.
Yes.
So that's 42 quid, right? So £42 to buy the physical silver coin, and the silver in the market is $32. So you're talking about £42 to 25, even just as a catch up in terms of pounds, or 26, £27 maybe. But no, there's a complete disconnect going on there. So I know it is always more expensive to buy the physical than maybe the ETF, but certainly not that level of fracture. So yeah, the world's going a bit mad, isn't it, really? Let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was obviously other things you touched on them at the start there, where obviously Trump's trade tariffs, obviously he rode back on the Mexico. Apparently had a very good conversation with the Mexican PM. He had a good conversation with Justin Trudeau as well in Canada, and apparently he's put a suspension or temporary, is it 30-day sort of review on that. Presumably there'll be some sort of rollback. Obviously the China tariffs, I believe, start on the 10th of February. That's a 10%. I don't know what he's doing with this. I don't think It's trade tariffs are not good for any economy, really, as far as I can really understand it. There's been UK and EU relations. You know, Keir Starmer became the first UK Prime Minister to attend an EU leaders' meeting post-Brexit, signalling a reset in UK-EU relations. This comes amidst discussions on various post-Brexit issues, including trade and security. So obviously, that one was very good to see. I mean, is there going to be some sort of reset in the in the kind of Brexit thing going on with Starmer? You know, he's obviously I don't know, but we'll. It remains to be seen whether there'll be some sort of new tariff or trade system put in place with the EU.
We're either in or we're out. It's got to be the case, isn't it? You know, and we've suffered the pain of getting out now. I don't think we should go back in again. But anyway, such is life. No, in terms of the tariffs, the only thing that tariffs are going to do is import inflation. Okay. Now, what Trump is trying to say is we owe 35 or $37 trillion, and that's because we've been supplying everybody. The problem is that the US has now put a stop to everything going out the door. So from a point of view of Elon Musk and his Doge, so he's basically, I think, put a stop on everything. So in other words, everything stopped until we
Well,
assess
no, he shut down
what's going.
USA. Did you see he shut down the US AIDS system, which is unbelievable, like
So
madness.
now we had things here because we have the American University in Cairo, and there was a few things on Facebook saying because there's quite a few of those Egyptian students that are able to go to that because of US aid. And basically they've said we're going to maintain your ability to go to these courses regardless of whether the money comes, but only for this next term until we see what's happening. So there's people doing university education and stuff like that. That's stopped, basically. The payments have stopped. So it's going to affect a lot of situations. Now, some of that will obviously come back, I'm sure. But I think he has to stop it all to find out what's good and what's not good, if you know what I
Yeah.
mean. All the ones that are squealing and saying, oh, we need this for this, this, and this, then they're probably going to get it back because they will be viewed as this is the right thing to do. But all
Yes.
the other stuff that's maybe not so as it should be, they're not going to squeal, are they?
I mean, I saw quite a few film stars pulled out on it, like Sean Penn when he was pictured with Zelensky in Ukraine. He was paid $2 million just for the photo opportunity by US Aid. And there was all sorts of other film stars who'd gone over there just for the publicity to be paid these, you know, $4 million, $6 million. And you're thinking, for one day's work, man, this is, you know, what is this? It's almost a criminal organization that they're doing this, you know, glorifying war for their own benefit.
Unbelievable. I didn't read that. That's absolutely tragic, isn't it?
Yeah,
How
absolutely.
can you call that foreign aid? That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So I mean, the tariff thing is interesting because you know, tariffs increase the price of the imported goods, obviously, which can reduce the imports. But then I guess that leads to a smaller trade deficit. There fewer dollars need to be exchanged for the foreign currencies. Is that why we've seen an increase in the dollar of late, do you think?
I think it's just a trade on the basis that they think America's going to be great again, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, these things are all American based and all American goods. So does this mean the US economy is going to do well and therefore the stock market could do well and therefore more foreign investment is flooding in and therefore more demand for dollars? I don't know. I don't know. It's all conjecture at the minute. There's no economics behind it, or there doesn't seem to be. The only economics I can see are things like the metals, the critical metals. So you've got gold, you've got silver. You know, we had news there during the week as well, I think, for tungsten, that China's put, you know, bans on tungsten effectively or tariffs. So that's obviously going to be good for companies like Guardian Metal Resources, American based. Like if they don't get a grant, something's badly wrong because you've got a defense type metal that is in the USA and they
Yeah.
don't have it from anywhere else. I mean, that's the other thing. The other local tungsten would be Canada. So if that is that, all of a sudden you got 25% bloody tariff on it. So it makes the Guardian Metal thing even better, you
Yeah,
know.
and also silver. Don't forget, most of the world's biggest miners are in Canada as well, of silver I'm talking about now. So that'll be an interesting one.
Well, the thing you sent me was the biggest producer of silver was Mexico.
Yeah.
So if you look at physical silver and we have 25% on silver, what's going to happen to silver?
Yeah.
You know, because it's not just silver as a store of wealth, it's silver as an industrial requirement. especially for these chips and all the different things that are made.
Yeah, there's also the export ban from China was also for saw quite a few rare earths. It was like tellurium, bismuth, indium, molybdenum or molybdenum, as Oliver laughs when I say it, molybdenum, which is another metal that obviously Guardian have mentioned in the past. So that's an interesting one. And
And
there,
it helps Cobra as well, doesn't it? Because they've
yes,
got obviously
tellurium and
have
all their rare earths.
Cobra Resources in Australia there with the rare earth project, which is going to compete with the Chinese prices. Now, if the Chinese prices are suddenly much higher because of tariffs, then they're going to be 25% better off, obviously, because they'll be able to sell just under them in terms of that. So, yeah.
So let's move on to our first guest this week. We're joined by Leon Kurtzer, CEO of Jubilee Metals. Welcome back to the Sunday Roast, Leon.
Oh, thank you, Phil. Thank you for the opportunity again.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so we've just seen updates from the company on its Zambia operations, confirming the restart of Roan following stable power supply and the processing of higher grade copper feed to accelerate production. The company has secured 200,000 tons of copper material at 1.6% copper, more than double the 0.7% grade currently processed, with potential for long-term supply. Roan can process up to 45,000 tons per month, and Jubilee is evaluating extending full production for over 3 years. The material acquisition includes a $2.7 million payment settled through the issuance of 51.76 million new shares at 4.2 pence, a 1.2% premium to the February the 4th closing price. You highlighted Roan's flexibility to process both high-grade mined and waste materials, helping to recover lost output from recent power outages whilst boosting cash flow. Jubilee continues due diligence on the large waste project, with completion expected in March 2025, and will review copper production guidance after a 4 to 6 week operational run on the new feed. Tell us more surrounding these updates, please, Leon.
Yeah, Phil, definitely. I mean, we've had, as we've discussed before, we've faced some real challenges during December and January in Zambia and our operations that materially impacted our ability to operate, especially Roan. This followed, the most worst time. What could have happened is, as we completed the ramp up of Roan after constructing and investing this unique facility, to then bring it down because of power supply issues that we faced. And we had to react and react quick. The first thing we've done very successfully is secure a new power agreement, which is different from the previous one in that it's distributed power. So it means that it's a multitude of power suppliers who feed into a network from where we buy our power and from a private company, rather than being exposed to a single power generating company. That's been very successful. It went live mid-Jan, and we have not had a single power outage since. We've lost nearly 8 weeks, 9 weeks of operational time at Roan. So we had to also look at ways of how do we win back some of that production time that we had lost. And one way of doing that is to go after high-grade material, expensive but high-grade material. That means that we are able to put in more copper units for every ton we process than operating at the lower grade waste material that comes through into that facility. And we've been successful. The team has done a great job in securing these resources. We've secured the rights to the first 200,000 tons of this material. And as you said, 1.6% copper, it's more than double current feed grade into that plant. And if you just look at the inherent value of this material at 1.6, it means we're paying roughly £2 million for a $30 million copper asset to come into our Roan. The beauty of this is as we push it through our plant, we clearly will see the bump in our copper production come through. It gives us the option to also then look to do it over an extended period because of the amount of this material that's come onto the market within the area where we've built our plant. And this material has become available purely because of the hardship many companies had faced and because of their inability to operate during the past period. So it's a real opportunity for Jubilee to act and act quick and win back some of that lost time and at the same time bump our copper production.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've obviously done well to shore up this 200,000 tons and as you say, the higher grade material as well. But just I mean, there's probably a few shareholders saying, oh, it's extra dilution, at the time when the share price is obviously is at a pretty low point from a sort of 52 week perspective. So just talk through the rationale behind it. I mean, obviously it's around about 1.7% or 1.75% dilution of the company, so not a massive amount for, as you say, circa $30 million. pounds worth of actual, of material there. So just talk us through the rationale behind why, what made you decide to do this, really?
Yeah, it was a tough debate. It's been reviewed by the board, and really the motivating factor was expediency, time, and opportunistic. Being able to secure something of such great value for such a compelling price, and do it immediately. And it's a once-off acquisition of rights, where after a company through its cash flows continue purchasing more and more and more of this material. So really a shot in the arm to get the company to operate at a much higher throughput immediately, rather than running the risk of losing this opportunity by acquiring slowly blocks of this material and slowly acquiring the rights of this material and running the risk of actually losing this opportunity, which has offers such a great return to the company. And that really was the rationale to act, and act very, very quickly. We've also minimized the amount of equity that supports this transaction by maximizing the amount funded by the operations for this acquisition and the rights to more of this material. So it's something that's been considered and debated heavily to minimize, exactly as you said, that frustration of dilution, but clearly offsetting it by the significant value that it creates.
So there's obviously an opportunity cost involved in this, Leon, because
Yes.
you could have carried on with the current status, if you like, and used the
Correct.
0.7% copper. I've looked at the opportunity cost in terms of the cost of the amount of copper that would come from the 200,000 at 1.6, as opposed to 200,000 at 0.7. That opportunity cost is about $18 million difference. So do you see that's advantageous in terms of how much stock you've managed to sort of negotiate for this deal?
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. It's very much part of the debate and part of the decision making, because that opportunity cost is not only 18, but it's for now. It's the 200,000 block is the opportunity cost. Of course, the longer we operate on this, and based on the success that we'll see over the coming weeks, as we plan to commence on this material already within the coming 3 4 days, we will be putting Rowan onto this material. We have the option of extending that 200,000 for much, much longer. And it's only possible because of this upfront acquisition we've made, to be able to extend and increase the amount of material at this grade through Rowan. It immediately puts into perspective the other vast quantities of stock we hold at much lower grade and what to do with that much lower grade stock we hold in Zambia.
Yeah, so there hopefully will be some sort of financial recompense for a lot of the stock that you hold that you may. I wouldn't say never used, but certainly it's probably not in this decade, and maybe not even in the next decade that you're actually going to be using that processing if you start getting high grade resource.
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. I mean, the value to shareholders for us to deliver a significant step up yet again in our copper production is really significant. That if we deliver that to them, the returns to our investors are significant, especially as you say, the opportunity to actually do this over a extended period of time for the group. And at the same time, as we say in the announcement, that brings to the obvious debate to the fore, that we have these vast quantities of much, much lower grades in our asset portfolio, and we have several people knocking on the door to buy some of these much lower grade assets from us. So there is that opportunity as well now that's being offered to us to look at liquidating some of that stock, which funds various expansion projects that we are pursuing. It brings the large waste project into focus. We are able to sell off some of these lower grade stocks, which we won't be touching in the next 15 years because of the quantity we already hold, and through that fund some of our expansion and investment we are doing in Zambia.
So, Leon, from the perspective of having this high grade stuff going through Rome,
Yes.
I just did the calculations based on Rowan going full pelt 45,000 tons per month, and that would produce 8,640 tons of copper or copper concentrate. I mean, is that above or below what you anticipate?
Exactly as your calculation. It's easy to do that calculation if you look at our recovery rates, that by putting this higher grade into Rowan alone exceeds our guidance that we've given on copper. And that's the ability Rowan holds. And it holds it because, as we say in this announcement, the capital we invested into Rowan, you now sit with a facility that can do things simultaneously rather than in the past it could do either or. Today, we are able to feed Rowan with this higher grade material while simultaneously we continue processing our waste materials through Roan, but we're able to bump that operation by allowing the capacity allocated to waste to be reduced while we increase the capacity allocated to this high-grade material. Quite a unique opportunity we have in Zambia, and I'm sure there's many companies out there that wish they had such a facility capitalized, commissioned, and ramped up already.
So just to be clear, do you think you're going to exclusively use the high grade stuff, or you think there is still going to be some of the other stuff used to supplement that? What is the
Our
best
immediate
course of action?
so our immediate plan is that we are going to do operate both through the facility, and we'll then review within 4 to 6 weeks. If the numbers add up on the high grade as we expect, it obviously leans towards exclusively allocating this capacity to the high grade material.
Yeah, especially if you have it. And I mean, unfortunately, the drought and the lack of electricity has caused this opportunity to come about, because basically there must be countless miners all over Zambia now who have dug stuff up. They can't process it, one, because they haven't got processing facilities, and two, they haven't got the electricity.
And people underestimate the hurdle and the height of that hurdle to have an operating processing footprint in country. There are very few companies who can lay claim to that. The fact that we have an operating refinery and we have a fully capitalized new Roan facility puts us in an enormous advantageous position to capitalize on that opportunity. And we are able to utilize the significant processing capacity to target many of these resource opportunities. And it speaks to what we're trying to create around Munkoyo, Project G, where all of these operations are being brought into operation and expanded to capitalize on this processing footprint we already hold.
So how are things going, Leon, overall, in terms of we've obviously got Rowan, we've discussed the RNS that's come out. What's
Sure.
happening with Sable and the Munkoyo and the production that's coming from there, which hopefully feeding Sable again, probably a much higher grade than even the 1.6 that we've talked about at Rowan.
Quite correct. So Munkoyo is running beautifully on target, producing its material and coming through to Sable. The next part that we look to bring on stream at Munkoyo is its on-site processing of its material, while Project G is being ramped up in the background. So the strategy of dedicating our refinery to run of mine and mines we own through the open pit operations is bearing a lot of fruit.
Very good. So, I mean, we've talked for maybe 2 years about having 20,000, 25,000 tons of actual copper production. Do you
Yes.
think come 2026 this is viable now?
I do. I really do think it's viable, and it's driven by the success of open pit mining. So we have the Munkoyos, which support a refining footprint. And as we told, how do we get to that number? It is by dedicating our refinery capacity to the processing of the Munkoyos that we are bringing into operation. And we have targeted several more Munkoyos, which are in current discussions to conclude those transactions, where combined four Munkoyos, to give you a sense, would take up Sable's capacity. And we have two already. And that also then means that Roan becomes an independent processor, and it naturally migrates to also refining its own product at Rowan. At that point, you have got two processing capacities who combine comfortably make up a 25,000 ton per annum copper producing footprint in Zambia.
And a 25, sort of a 50% cost to actually do that. You're talking about $100 million of free cash flow then from that. I don't know whether it would be 50% or less or higher or lower.
Well,
What do you
is the key is on that return you're mentioning is the fundamentals that are supporting copper. You know, copper is fundamentally, if you look at the fundamentals that would support the copper price, which then also speaks to your margin, is the fact that we are living the reality, a reality of constrained copper supply in the world. And that is coming through. It's why copper, no matter, you know, there's been some real knocks in the world. There's been some serious risks being identified in the world. But copper continues to maintain its pricing levels of 9,000 and above, showing how strong support it receives in the market. It takes very little for copper to react and react sharply in the market pricing.
Yeah, and
You
you've
didn't
also
find any gold in any of this copper, because it's now
well.
$2,850
Yeah, true too.
a ton.
Absolutely. But actually, and there are certain areas in Zambia where, yes, we do get gold credits and silver credits for the products we make in copper. Not all, but there are certain areas in Zambia where they do carry gold and silver credits. And you're quite correct. If ever there's a time to ensure you get your gold credits up, it's now.
Tell us, Leon, obviously in the last RNS you talked about the fact that Jubilee was concluding details of the due diligence on the large waste
Yes.
project. Just give us
Yes.
an update. Obviously that's as per the terms of the agreement
Yes.
during March 2025.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, we're concluding that work. We're just putting the final results together. And we, in fact, also have been, I mean, we've also allowed certain companies to take further samples off this dump because we then access their processing facilities, which adds to our due diligence. So it simulates the processing of that material. And as per our agreements, it means that we will conclude or must conclude our transactional documentation before the end of March. And that's where we're working towards now. As soon as the due diligence comes out, we'll of course inform the market of those results, those final results, and our view on those results. But the main focus now is driving towards the end of March.
Yeah,
We have
absolutely.
several companies that have been interested in this project because it's showing such great interest and it's receiving such great interest by many established operating footprints. Our approach to actually use some of these processing footprints to compile or do some of our due diligence works where they process on our behalf and create more data for us has also created more excitement.
Sure. And obviously, both of you have been down at Indaba mining Indaba this week. So I wanted to ask you both your thoughts on the show this year. I mean, obviously, we saw some pretty impressive news announcements from Midnight Sun that on the Solwezi copper, I believe they hit 10% copper. We've
Yes.
seen Prospect Resources Limited, that their managing director, Sam Hosak, presenting at mining Indaba. So just talk us through some of the highlights that you saw, Leon, and some of the sort of takeaway key moments.
Just to be clear, I was only at one day at the Indaba, but absolutely, if you look at some of those highlights, it shows the interest in Zambia. It shows the interest in copper that's coming through strongly. It's also the reason why we as Jubilee have to act and act fast, because we've had the luxury of the only company really focusing within the area that we are establishing operational footprints, the kind of reefs we pursue. But it's hotting up. The excitement and the interest around copper is significant and it's tangible when you're at the Indaba.
I see there's going to be a lot of things happening this year. I think Galileo Extract, African Pioneers License in Northwest Zambia, with the Ivanhoe sniffing about, has got to come to some sort of conclusion. You've also got African Pioneers joint venture with First Quantum. So there is a lot going on in Zambia, I think, and there's potential there to find literally masses of copper, as they already have, Ivanhoe already has up above. So yeah, from a Zambia point of view, that's it. From people that I've spoken to, the Indaba wasn't actually quite as busy as it has been in the last few years. I don't know why. I question that actually a lot of people have already got their projects and are getting on with it because they basically want to get the stuff out the ground. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Absolutely, Kevin. I think you make a very valid point there. Is what I, what we are finding, not just at Indaba, but outside in general, is many companies are looking to secure copper, and they're also realizing that dealing with or partnering with, in some shape or form, with companies who are established operators within the jurisdiction that they are seeking to secure copper is becoming quite a hot topic. And people are realizing the value of knowledge and experience companies hold who have been there, done it, faced the obstacles and overcame them. It's becoming a real value trading criteria to within these regions.
Yeah, I mean, you probably know better than most. It's not an easy country to do business in, no matter what way you want to look at it. And maybe, God has played its part this last year in terms of the weather and the fact that the water just hasn't been there for the hydropower, which nobody could have guessed, really. Nobody could have guessed. I think if you'd had constant power, you'd be in a very, very different situation now than you would be. And you wouldn't have even done this deal probably because you wouldn't have had to. The scenario is it would have all already been processed. I mean, maybe you would have done this deal, but you would have done this deal for different reasons, and maybe earlier even, because the whole processing system would have already been up and running, and it would have just been, oh, we can put better stuff through this system.
Oh, absolutely, Kevin. I mean, last in November, we were in such a high. Investment has came to fruition. Our plant was operating. We were ramping up our facilities. We had finished the capitalization program of Rowan. We couldn't have thought we'd be in a better place. And yeah, we faced challenges, absolutely, but we came out the other side with a stronger and better power agreement. We came out the other side with opportunities that would never have been presented before, to be able to now utilize these facilities on significantly higher grade material than what we had envisaged we would do. It doesn't take away from the value of the waste we hold, but it does allow us to show far greater returns far sooner.
Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of different people talking, and I think all the countries in Africa, and especially because of what Senor Trump is deciding he's going to be doing in America, he's going to have to get his assets or his resources from somewhere. Europe doesn't have a lot of resources. Maybe Australia is an option, but it's glaringly obvious that a lot of these things are going to have to come from Africa.
Well, I mean, the one key message that I believe with in all of that chaos is the fact that there is so much talk, so many threats around what metal they have or don't have and need. It shows the importance and the critical nature of mining and metals in the world, in economy, and for the world to grow. It was something that was forgotten somehow over the past couple of years, and it is back. People have realized that, as you said, you need the minerals, you need the metals in everything you touch and you use. You need it for the economies to sustain themselves. So, if ever there's a time to be within a mining environment and with companies who have secured vast assets that they bring into operation, it's now.
Yeah, and just as a last question then, how do you see that from the chrome perspective? Have we seen chrome doing well over the last few weeks, or have we still seen a bit of a dip?
Yeah, so chrome, I mean, is clearly dominated by China, right? I mean, it's by far the world's biggest producer of ferrochrome and stainless steel. They've just had their New Year celebrations, and China will return to full business towards the latter part of February. So one doesn't expect over this period, because it's so dominated by China, the chrome prices, there'll be any significant movements. There might be slight shifts, but nothing significant. One expects more of the chrome price to show any recovery post China coming back into full business towards the end of February.
Okay, good. But I mean, at the end of the day, you're still profitable. Everything that's coming out is profitable. The PGM seem to have started to recover a little bit, not a great deal, but I think that could spring you without doubt
Exactly,
if
Kevin.
required.
I mean, we look at fundamentals. We can't really control the prices, but ex when you speak of PGMs, what is good to see is the demand in PGMs slightly picking up. It'll be tough if the demand was dropping off and prices were stable, not to expect the prices to drop further. But if demand continuously is picking up and the prices are flat, one can only expect that those prices must reflect those fundamentals in the near future.
Yeah, I think traders are going to be buying all of the PGMs as well as the gold because it's a hedge against inflation, even though obviously gold is the main one. It doesn't mean that there isn't a spillover to the other metals, I think, in terms of trading anyway. So yeah. Anyway, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and yeah, good luck with this process, and let's hope that copper starts churning out of Rowan over the next few months.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Leon. Okay, I mean, it's always good to catch up with Leon and talk Zambia. Yeah, obviously, whilst on the subject of Zambia, you caught up with Colin Bird at the Indaba Mining Conference in the week and asked him about the current geopolitical situation, politics, and how it might shape the future of copper and other commodities. Let's have a listen to what he said.
So here we are in South Africa. We're at the Indaba, and I've caught up here with Colin Bird. So yeah, Colin, how's it been going at Indaba? And tell us your thoughts on the Trump world that we now have in this metals world.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's nice to see you again. I mean, I think this Indaba is possibly smaller than a lot of Indabas I've been to. And, by definition, it's sort of the main hall there has got into sort of countries, trade, banks, lawyers, consultants. The nature of the Indaba has changed. But what hasn't changed is that people down here are to meet people And I don't think there's a better networking venue. And you can have the PDAC, you can have which, you know, the Diggers and Dealers. But I do think this is the premier show. And we've had a great show, really. We've met big and small. I refer to that in market cap, not in stature, of course. Mm-hmm. And we met some very interesting people. And there is a real appetite for copper, but there's also an extreme nervousness, which I don't think I've ever sensed in my life. And I think anybody listening to this podcast and the antics which are going on, we'll probably share that. You know, when we're going to buy Greenland, we're going to buy Panama, we're going to buy Gaza, and we're going to build another Dubai. And meanwhile, you know, the place is actually just a lump of rubble. And it's a very sad human situation. I just don't think it's appropriate, but that's a personal opinion. But looking at it, at the policies which seem to be emerging, it seems to me very strange that if you haven't got enough of something, you put a tariff on it, 30, 40% on copper, which he said he's going to do. We haven't got enough of it, so we put a tariff on it. So naturally, the manufacturers, this is all going to get passed on. By definition, if it gets passed on, it's going to increase inflation. If you increase inflation, then, of course, that's great for the commodities. It's great for copper. This seems to be a vicious circle. I mean, it's not confined to copper, but I think anybody who's listening to this podcast that knows that that's my love and passion. I just don't see how it's going to create a load of tension. And quite frankly, I don't see how he's going to help himself or make the United States great again with that policy, which is one of many, which appear to me to be very, very, very inflationary. And I mean, the copper price, I think, is already beginning to show it. And I wonder if what's happening in the east and northeastern side of the Congo, if there's not a message being sent to Donald which says you might be getting 30% of nothing. Because, you know, the amount of copper which is coming out of the Congo is in actual fact very, very significant. You know, when we look where the guns are coming from, which part of the world the guns are coming from, it's not difficult to see. And, you know, we also hear that China, you know, Beijing and Shanghai are challenged, you know, empty tower blocks and whatever. And yet at the same time, I'm seeing more Chinese delegations in Africa than I've ever seen in my life. So, you know, there's so many sort of arguments going on, but the copper price will speak for itself. It's a tsunami. It's a tsunami which is actually developing. It's, you know, at the moment, it's a wee bit of a storm and a few waves. But there's a tsunami developing here because, you know, Kevin, I in 2017, when we built this copper portfolio, started building this copper portfolio, it's taken us 6 or 7 years. But when we started building this copper portfolio, based on that demand, that was my thinking, demand, you know, the demand for copper's got to go. You know, it wasn't based on cars, electric cars. It was based on India requiring not to replace infrastructure or upgrade infrastructure, they ain't got any, to actually create their infrastructure for growth, which I think will be greater than China ever was. And then there's the emerging nations. And then there is bombed out infrastructure in the States, which actually has to be replaced. So the sheer demand and the new applications, for that matter, for copper are immense. What has surprised me, Kevin, and is the supply side. It really is challenged. If you look at Latin American, you know, the majors in Chile, they're actually dropping production and reluctant to go for the new expenditure because of the labor laws. The new president doesn't want new mines. We've seen poor old First Quantum and the problems they've got in Panama. $10.3 billion gone down a swanny. I rather hope for them and expect for them that that mine will come back. But, you know, it's been a bitter blow for them and the shareholders, and fairness to them, they've been extremely resilient, and the results show that. So I think we're going into, and you know, I'm the eternal optimist when it comes to copper, but I think we're going into an all new bright world of copper. And if anybody's going to help us, it's Donald's inconsistency. So really, you know, say what you like about the guy and be mercenary towards your own objectives, which I don't really like being, because I am a great believer in the human race and believe that we should all have a fair shot at life. But I'm afraid if you look at the pure commercial fundamentals of Donald's activities, if it ain't going to create inflation, I don't know what is. And if inflation's not good for commodities, history isn't being repeated. So that's my take on the Indaba. That's my take on Donald. And that's my take on the prospectivity for the copper price for the rest of this year.
Yeah, history says that we're probably in an inflationary area now, again, because of all of these different things. When you see the price of gold's increased, I actually think one of the commodities that is very undervalued is silver. You've also got, obviously, the copper. And you've got nations such as India, China, the whole rebuilding of the Ukraine, the whole rebuilding of Gaza. You know, how much do you think that actual demand cycle is going to be much higher than we all even anticipated?
Well, all of the new crises actually are increasing the demand, because you look at the rebuild. I mean, you know, the Russian influx into Ukraine was pretty well targeted towards that eastern side. That's where all the bidrills are. And so you've really got to rebuild some infrastructure in Gaza. I mean, every time I see the photos, I feel ill. I mean, you know, I mean, Donald's only comment, which I would support, was that it is now a bomb site. And it is so sad. And there stood Netanyahu at the side of him with a very interested look on his face, when in actual fact, he flattened it. So not to get any political, nobody wants to hear this, but the reality is that I think I wouldn't want to have been stood at the side of Donald when he was talking about him, about me flattening the place, but maybe I'm different. So no, all the events which has gone on have actually created more and more and more demand for copper. You know, Donald doesn't produce very much. You've got Arizona and Nevada, so he's nowhere near being self-sufficient in copper. So why would you impose a tariff on something you desperately need makes me scratch my head.
Don't scratch your head, Colin. Yeah. Anyway, we're in and out. We can't say that it's very sunny, though it is. We can't say it's really nice, though it is. But it's very windy, so that's all we can say. Anyway, thanks for your comments on that, Colin, and we'll move on to some other subjects.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. The best movers I've on my share scope is EUA, which was up 75% on no news. And again, no news, but one of the retail punters' favourite. And then there's Orosur Mining, OMI, up 60%. Mast Energy Developments up 25% on the week.
Creeping up nicely. That EUA one is obviously just on the fact that they think the Ukraine-Russian thing is going to get sorted out, I presume.
Could well be. And then obviously the standout RNSs of the week. It's been quite a slow week for RNS, you know, for news releases. But there's a few that I picked out. There's ARC Minerals announced first assay results from the joint venture with obviously Anglo-American in Zambia. Speaking from the Indaba conference in Cape Town, von Schoending outlined the significance of the findings, which confirm additional near-surface copper mineralization. He highlighted that assays from the Domes region revealed 0.6% copper over a 40-meter thickness, with high-grade intersects reaching 1.7% copper over 8 meters. So looks like they could be on to the start of what they defined as a Tier 1 deposit there. Strong financial position and extensive exploration territory, ARC Minerals expects an active year ahead. Then there was a release. Bazant Resources had some news this week announcing that IDM International, through which it holds its interest in the Mankayan copper gold project in the Philippines, agreed to merge with ASX-listed Blackstone Minerals Limited via a scheme of arrangement. IDM shareholders will receive 7.4 Blackstone shares per IDM share, valuing IDM at $18.7 million, following Bazant's recent conversion of its 137,500 IDM convertible loan notes. It now holds 20 million IDM shares and 2.8 million options. Upon completion of the merger, Bazant will receive 148 million Blackstone shares and 2.5 million options at $0.006. Executive Chairman Colin Bird sees the merger as a key step in advancing the Tier 1 Mankind project, aligning with the need to develop large copper assets amid a global supply shortfall. You caught up with him in the week, Kev, to talk Mankind and the wider prospects for Bazant, including Hope and Gorup, and this is what he had to say.
So moving on, we're going to just talk now to Colin about Bazant Resources and what's been happening in Namibia. More importantly, in the RNS that's just come out about Mankayan and the fact that I think it's over two-thirds of the market cap is going to be in tradable shares within 3 months. So, and the share price really hasn't reacted, which is absolutely bizarre. So there you go. What have you got to say, Colin?
Well, that we stated that Mankind was... I made the statement on quite a number of occasions that it's a very, very good project. There's over 10 million ounces of gold. There's around about 3 million tonnes of contained copper, all in a porphyry, which lends itself to the block cave method. And, of course, you can't manage these things when the other side of the world. And one man and a country manager is not the thing. And so we decided to monetize it with a well-known entrepreneur in Australia who's actually got an history of operating effectively in the Philippines. And so, as you see in the RNS, he's been vended into a company, quite a very successful guy who had some historical success. Copper is so popular in Australia at the moment. Whilst we've got our head in our hands wondering if it's going to drop to 7, they're convinced that it's going to be steady state 11. So isn't that amazing, Kevin? It really is. You know, I've had that mood here at the Indaba, but I've also received it before I came to the Indaba. You know, just what a great appetite Australia has for copper. And I find that rather strange. But to cut it, Kevin, as usual, hit it right on the nose. You can talk as much as you like, but it's got a 25-year mine license. It's got its community projects all fixed up. The community are working with them. They've done what they are good at. They're good at networking in the Philippines. They're good at working with local communities. And they've vended it now into a company of individuals who are also good at working in that part of the world, as well as Vietnam and other places in Southeast Asia. So I'm optimistic. We've monetized it. And as Kevin said, you know, it's rather strange. I mean, it's going to take Kevin, but probably a bit optimistic when he said 3 months for a scheme of arrangement to go through, but we argue in 4 months versus 3, and the very, very outside 5 months is the typical time for a scheme of arrangement in Australia. So there we are, and then at the end of that, we will have the best part of $2.2 million, which are not encumbered, which are not restricted, which are not locked up shares, and which are readily tradable. So when you think about it, that's getting on for, well, you know, if you look at 2.15 versus our market cap, that's about 65-60% of our market cap in cash. And we raised some cash the other week, as you know. So in actual fact, when you look at cash, we would be good for about 2.6, 2.7 million pounds worth of cash in a company which has got a market cap less than 3.15 million. And concurrent with that is the mine is getting closer and closer to being ready. And I think we announced to the market that we're doing our test work on optimization of ore sorting and the rest of it. So that work has been completed. And of course, I'm not allowed to sort of pre-announce the results, but we're going to get those results out to the market as fast as we possibly can. And that really is a significant step, because we want to know how we can sort of vary the uptick, the cost of some recovery, in order to fill that mill. And we can actually drive our project to meet the copper price. So we've been very effective at that. All contractors have been talked to yet again. New pricing, because some of the pricing was 18 months old. And so the only thing we're waiting for now, of course, is the environmental permit. We're not expecting that to take anywhere near as long as the license, because the application was submitted concurrently with the license and was integral and part of the license. So I'm very, very confident that that will be with us, and will be with us very shortly. So that mine has got, and we'll put a sort of indicated capability statement, financial capability out shortly. But, you know, that mine is going to be capable of significant cash flow. So nice position, and you know, and you mentioned silver earlier on. There's silver there, quite a bit of it. There's gold. So apart from the copper, you know, we've got the best part of a percent of copper equivalent between our silver and gold. So it really is a very, very, very nice project, and getting better the more, you know, the closer we get to the detail. The better it gets, and often these projects do the opposite to that. The closer you get to detail, along comes the bad news, or not necessarily fatal flaws, but things which knock your cash flow, knock your return on investment. But everything we see about Hope and Gorup is a project which is going to meet expectations, and we can't wait, of course, to get into that 17-kilometre, which in actual fact we've got the adjoining license and the adjoining license, so it totals 52 kilometres in all. We think we're going to make we've got all the prospectivity for a tier one investment there. So I guess, you know, you look at our plans for Byzantium as it is now, this is an interim project, But there's a big project along the way there where we build a plant, you know, on the way to Walvis Bay, and Open Garup turns into quite a sizable project. So that's good. So when you actually look at Bizant, we basically, our treasury says that we're 70% covered by cash, and we've got a project which we'll talk about the financing in very, very shortly in due course, and we've got cash for our other activities. So it's in good shape, Kevin. It's in good shape.
Yeah, I haven't visited Hope and Gorup. You can see that it's ripe to be progressed. Obviously, just the license, you're waiting for it. And really, it will. The profitability of that project isn't in question just with the copper, but with the copper, gold, silver credit. What could people expect in terms of a percentage of copper equivalent, do you think, overall the project? I'm not talking about highs here, we're just talking about overall. What do you think is a possible copper equivalent percentage?
Well, you know, I mean, this is not necessarily a forward-looking statement because you just add up the things, but the results are coming out, but we're certainly talking with today's copper price and your anticipated silver price, the today's silver price, we put in anywhere between 0.8 and 1% copper equivalent on top of what we've got. So you're talking 2 to 2.4 tons, which is quite nice to be when it's open pittable, you know, because we've not, for a good 5 or 6 years, we've got no intentions of going much lower than 70 metres and doing mini pits. You're literally talking about an excavator, drill machine and a couple of trucks. So when you're digging that sort of stuff up, your costs are going to be very low, extremely low.
Yeah, that's $200-$250 rock.
Yeah, that's right. And I can't reveal the contracting costs, but we're a lot less than that. And we've been really very hard-nosed in our negotiations. So crikey, you know, I mean, and this is not what we were talking about 2 years ago. Of course, we've all been surprised by the gold price. And it looks like it isn't finished yet. So, but I don't care if the gold price goes down to 1,400. It still makes a significant contribution. Where we sat now, it more than covers our working costs. So what a nice situation to be, where the copper mine comes for free, or the copper results come for free, because you covered, you know, your income from byproducts cover the working costs for the copper.
Yeah, I've been having conversations with different people, but me and Phil were having a conversation. I can see $70 silver in the next 18 months, and I can see $3,500 gold. Just on exactly what you said, Colin, total uncertainty from the world, and Trump's not helping that matter, and inflationary things, you know, and copper, I think we could see anything from $11,000 to $13,000 a ton. Again, why? Inflation. And actually, in true dollar terms, that might not be worth any more than it is today in terms of the inflation side of things. So, yeah, it's a very interesting times. And Hope and Gorup, for me, if you read Charles's article, it's a home run. It's, you know, 20 million to 40 million pounds of free cash flow kicking off once it starts. And it's not going to cost you that much to get the thing started. Yeah, I don't expect you to answer that, but you can have a comment.
Well, there's two ways of getting it started, quite frankly, Kevin. You know, we do intend to make some sort of alterations to a plant we're involved with. But if we don't make those alterations, and we're going to drive the ore sorter with solar panels, but the company we're dealing with the solar panels are quite happy to provide the generators. So in actual fact, if we took shortcuts, instead of going for the, you know, did a Toyota instead of a Rolls Royce, it could be in production much faster. Personally, the copper price will drive that. If we do see a spike that we expect to get into production and get some early, really significant cash flow, we'd be fools not to do it. If in actual fact things stay as they are now, we'll put in our mag separators, we will put in our surge bin, and we will put in our limited automation. But that's very much in the balance. If we see the chance for that, I like your word, Aaron, if we see the chance for an home run, money back, payback very quick, we'll go for it. So we're watching the market very closely. Our contractors are all ready for the off, and it's just whether or not we actually do plant modifications or get straight in. But as I say, our pits are just a bit like those chrome mines in South Africa, 60, 70 metre high walls, drill blast, and it's lovely ore body. You can see it, you know, amphibolite on one side, quartz, really clean cut off. It'd be a pretty grotty miner who couldn't, in actual fact, limit dilution. There's absolutely no need to break into footwall and hanging wall with careful mining and good supervision. And as I say, with two trucks and an excavator, it's not as though you're running around looking at 50 items, 50 units to produce your production. You're looking at a very modest production of about, probably to get taking the ore sorting before you hit the ore sorter, 450,000 tonnes a year is less than 40,000 a month. It's very small,
and
pit.
You're but also not going to have a huge overburden to take off either.
Oh, good Lord. No, this stuff reports the surface.
Yeah.
So you're actually standing on the sulfides, Kevin.
Yeah. No, we've been there and there's green chips all over the ground,
No, you're standing on the ore body.
It's no overburden to take off. So really, as you say, as you start sticking the stuff in the trucks, it should be straight to production. And if people start to realise that, and how quickly this can all come about. We said last week on the roast that there was people arguing on Bazant that there's no possibility that this will be in production in 2025. And I think they've got a good chance of being proved very wrong. But you'll be able to know that, I think, based on the licenses, nothing else.
I'm not allowed to comment on that forward-looking statements. Not even approach the confirmation or denial, but our intent is to get this operation going up as fast as we can, and I think we should hit the copper price running. I really do.
Yeah, indeed. Great.
And then whilst on the subject of Colin Bird, obviously Extract agreed to purchase dump material in Zambia's copper belt for $300,000, funded from existing cash, to conduct trial, testing and evaluation. The material priced at $1.15 per tonne will be removed by Extract while the seller remains responsible for statutory royalties. Colin highlighted the numerous dump processing opportunities in Zambia and stated that this purchase will help assess grade, quantity and treatability before considering further acquisitions. Again, let's have a listen to what he had to say.
We're talking about this time the announcement with Extract. Interesting announcement, Colin. You've bought some copper on the ground, or not copper on the ground, but ore on the ground with some copper in it. What's your thoughts on this? Why has this come out?
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, I saw some sort of fairly negative remarks on the bulletin board, but 70% of a mine in terms of capital operating costs is the actual risk of mining. And these are parked on the surface. There's over 1 billion tonnes, big and small, around Zambia. And we've identified some fairly rich areas. And you can't pile into this because people think, I'll put a fine grinding plant in and, we'll get a lot more copper out. That is so naive to employ the same techniques as made it waste in the first place. So we want to do some meaningful test work. And work out what it, and the clever bit, of course, is to make sure that what is the input. And one of the difficulties has always been working out what is the quantity and really what is the average grade. And inevitably, these dumps have got high spots, low spots, middle spots and no spots. So you can get caught out very badly just by going around the edges, taking a few grabs and thinking, I've got 1.5%. Just, we should all step back, Kevin. Mines are 500 or 600 metres deep in Chile, and they're looking at 0.4 and 0.35. We're looking between 0.6 and 1.2% surface. Yeah.
They're above
ground. And then they're above ground. They're one, and they're there for the taking. And in the days they were put there, there were waste. And I think the market sometimes understand there was a good reason there were waste. Because if you go back to 1920, 1930, 1940 and those years, they couldn't handle oxide ores. They just didn't know what to do with them. So actually, they were classed as waste. So if somebody thinks we're getting the residue from a plant, in actual fact, they were never shown to a plant. A lot of this ore was never shown to a plant. In fact, the vast majority of it. So you've got to put this in perspective. It's as good as the primary ore body, but it was the wrong nature. It was oxides. So, and there's over 1 billion tons of this stuff. So, and when somebody says, what we're doing now, I say to them, what we're doing now is that by being in a country for as long as we have, we've built up a network and we know people that we should work with them, and we know people that we might have difficulty working with, and we know that people that we don't want to work with. And that network is, that's the hard work of going into a new country, of basically selling your own credibility And it doesn't, and you don't do it overnight. And you know, Extract is seen to be a company gets on with life, drills its projects, talks to government, and keeps everybody informed who it should keep informed. Good partner relationships. So that's the sort of company we are. And that's the company we want to be. And so, you know, these potential partnerships in Dumbs came. We thought, well, we'd invest in taking a position. And so we got our assets against that position. We've actually purchased the rights on a dollars per ton basis, 80 cents to 115. And quite frankly, we dig it up. We've got markets to actually sell it as it is. And of course, we'll retain some for test work and just see what the upgrading can be and how zonal the dumps are, both in a vertical or horizontal way. So I think it's basically a trading addition to Extract, which makes absolute sense. And I think our shareholders will see it over the next few months. I really do.
So can you see this sort of trading arm being able to cover the fixed costs of Extract, you know, the management costs and also the listing costs over the coming few years if you get this up and running?
Well, that's the idea, Kevin. Most of our companies are so lean and mean. I don't want to make general statements, which I can't support, but I would put the prognosis forward that most of our companies are the cheapest on AIM. And so, you know, 500, 550. Some of the companies who are not doing less than us are costing $1 million and $1.5 million to run. So to cover the overhead and more, I mean, quite frankly, some of the projects that we've got eyed up, if they come out on grade, will be more than an overhead cover. They'll be a real significant contributor to the performance of the company. So jury's out at the moment. So we say what we're doing. We say that we've covered our investment with asset, i.e., we own a portion of these dumps, and as a quid pro quo, we've got options into several surrounding dumps or nearby dumps. So let's let it all happen, Kevin. Won't be the death of the thousand lashes. In 3 or 4 months' time, I'll be able to tell you, wow, you know, glad we did that, Kevin. And I'm pretty confident that that's the sort of conversation we'll be having.
And from the point of view, just to keep Extract shareholders in view, the money's still coming from Mozambique, I take it, the gold. And I suppose the crown jewel, really, of Extract at the minute is going to be the Northwest licenses in Zambia. So can you tell us a bit about what's been happening? Yeah, without obviously overstepping the mark, because there's obviously only so much you can tell us.
Well, here we are at the end, you know, and here we are at the audience, if you like, for the Northwest. The big beast. But we've been, I'm sorry, and I don't want to appear to be either boasting or arrogant, but we've been, the team has been very diligent in getting what I think the most prime ground in the world, the continuity of Kamoa down into Zambia, that western foreland and thrust and fold belt. So we've been putting our sticks in the ground at Indaba. Kevin, that's what you'd expect, wouldn't you? And there's not many people now who don't know about it, don't know that we're positioned. It's been an eye-opener for quite a few of the big boys. And but, you know, is that mid-cap bunch who are still lean, who are still hungry, got a market cap of, say, $250 million Australian dollars or Canadian dollars, busy looking for new ventures. They act much faster than the majors. And they're out looking. And then there's the investment bankers who just love putting two and two together and hopefully making five instead of three, which has been the story over the last couple of years. So they too are looking for deals. So if we're talking to Indaba specific, we've got the right assets in the right place, talking to the right people. And I'm rather hoping something comes out of it, Kevin.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't ask you the question, but surely... Ivanhoe would want these licenses based on what they have in Angola and obviously the mine itself up above.
Well, I mean, that's a question I can't answer. When you look at candidates and rank them, they must be in the Premier League. They're certainly not in the minor counties, are they? Not in the small league. So both in terms of size of company, style of management, connections that they too have got with the Japanese, it doesn't seem... It would be ridiculous to assume that they might be one of the contenders. Of course, I'm not allowed to make a comment on that, really. in terms of do we talk to them, are we talking to them, have we talked to them. I'm afraid that's off this podcast.
Well, you obviously have talked to them, but not necessarily about this, because you've been in the mining industry a long time. So, yeah, there's lots of interesting things going on in Extract. Not even going to mention Australia, because until the copper price goes up to 11,000 or more, then yes, you have got an incredible asset there with 1.3 million tons of contained copper. But is somebody willing to option it or go for it until then? I don't know. But I don't know whether you want to comment on that or not.
Well, you will see, Kevin, that in another company, Bizant, we monetize an asset. This is ripe for the same. But of course, with our expectations are much greater. You know, one looks at that Jose Santa Maria in Argentina, which was a joint venture for, I think, $3.7 billion between Lundin and BHP. Our grades are about the same as that, you know? And then if we look at Alcane, which is about 60 or 70 kilometers away to the west, they've got a market cap of $237 billion. Their Boda ore body is not particularly different to ours. So I stand here convinced that this is a next generation mine. We could go out and drill it again, you know, Kevin, but we did get that very consistent 0.24, 25, 27. Good thing is, for $50,000, we found out, we proved that we could actually upgrade this. We've got a 9 years at 0.6, which we can upgrade. Sorry, which we don't need to upgrade, which could start any plant off. And all the work we're doing is costing less than $150,000 over a couple of years. But every dollar we put in, we've dropped down from 11,000 break-even, 10,000 break-even, and I'm taking it down. And you mentioned that 11,000. If one goes to Australia now, you see a far more bullish community, mining community, on what is the sustainable price of copper. In London, we seem to have gone into dumps, into doldrums, because electric cars, they're stalling. Of course they're stalling. They always was going to stall, because there's so many sort of other issues than the pure manufacture of an electric car. But again, in India, which is just starting up and will make the actual annual growth rate of China, you know, it'll be a joke compared to what will happen in India. There is no infrastructure, Kevin. There is no infrastructure. Copper dependent. America's infrastructure bombed out. Copper dependent. So when I went for copper in 2016, 2017, it was based on these sort of things. Emerging economies, fridges, new cars. Don't matter whether they're electric or not, because fridges, they still need their copper. So I am extremely bullish. And the thing I got dreadfully wrong, and sadly wrong, but it's going to work for us, was I thought the supply side might keep up with the, might sort of have a go at keeping up with the demand. Kevin, the supply side is totally wrecked. And you know, I said it in I gave a presentation in London in March, I think it was, last year, where I said, you know, copper, they fought over oil, there was wars fought over oil, there might be fought over copper. I'm sorry to say, that was a statement I put out in March last year, and I actually believe it more now than I ever did. And I'm not convinced that what's happening in the Congo isn't a way of saying to Mr. Trump, 30% on nothing. Doesn't make you very much, Donald. I'm also convinced that it's got to be a wake-up call to the rest of the world not to be dominant on places which are politically troubled and challenged. But sadly, Kevin, Chile, the president has basically canned a lot of licenses. The state company can't get the capital for the expansion. The mines are old and it's a sell-by date. Yeah, you saw what happened to Panama when they took First Quantum out after they spent $10.3 billion, and you've got to, you know, those mines in those rainforests has rot like hell and fat. So gee whiz, the upkeeper, that's not funny. So, but I think that one will come back on stream. First Quantum, again, have been very deep, very, very diligent. They know how to handle governments, and they've got a history of being very reasonable and a very highly competent group, which I'm convinced they'll restore Panama. But the fundamentals are that copper is not in the market at the moment at a time when it's sorely needed. The Chinese going out of their way to tell us what a terrible world we live in. Beijing is falling to bits, Shanghai is falling to bits, there's no manufacturing, and the tower blocks are all empty. You know, that's the most contrived thing I've ever heard in my life, when in actual fact China is full of folks. Sorry, Africa is full of Chinese groups trying to secure assets at a knockdown price. So, funny things going on, but that copper price at the moment is a tide washing against the side of the beach there. I think, but before the end of this year, it will be a tsunami. I really do. And, you know, you might say that's me believing my own bull. But you can say that because I do believe it. I believe it with more passion than I had in 2017.
It is, Colin, and it is partly you believe in your own bull, but the reality of the situation with all of these different influences are happening, you're going to be right. I can't see how you're not going to be right. The timing is really the only issue. I feel the same with gold, just because it's going to be a store of value. I feel the same with silver. We've got other metals such as tungsten, which now is all being provided, and the rare earths, which are all being provided from China. And, you know, the assets that are able to provide those assets in the West are going to boom, you know, because the stuff's going to go up in value significantly, whether it be copper, whether it be silver, whether it be gold, whether it be tungsten, whether it be rare earths. Yeah, and I think people need to wake up to the companies that have those assets. A lot of your companies have those assets within them and very close to production. Yeah, it's very interesting what you're doing in extract, because I'm quite sure, having been to Zambia, seen it in operation, the Chinese have got many plants all over Zambia, hungry for copper, hungry for ore, and there will be a way to you for you to make money in those situations, I'm sure. Having visited one of the Chinese plants ourselves when we were over there, they're desperate for ore, and they're just paying for it.
Yeah, I admire the Chinese because they do what the West wouldn't do. They basically put a plant in and then go looking for ore. We tend to do it the other way around. We basically go looking for ore and then we find it, put a plant in. And they build beautiful plants, and then they build them cheaper than we do. And of course, whilst we want the last squeal out of the rock in terms of recovery, the Chinese are looking for getting more out of the ground, and it costs, you know, they're more out than they put in, so to speak, in financial terms. So a profit is what they're after, a surplus of income over expenditure. And we use this word optimization, and he uses the word optimization. We sometimes lose 4 or 5 years, lose the opportunity. The Chinese do not lose the opportunity. They go in there, they build plants, they build them nicely, they go out, they make deals, and they make money. And that's why they're so good, and that's why they're so prospective and so progressive and got the positions they've got around the world.
And then they ship it all back to China.
Then they ship it all back to China, and Donald might be, as I say, he's got to watch out, it's not 30% of nothing. You know, and that's a great tariff. It's going to get him a lot of money. And meanwhile, his manufacturing might be starved of, you know, his manufacturing industry might be starved of copper. So watch out, Donald. Watch out, America. Let's have feet on floor and a bit of realism. That's the way I see it.
And all the things that we've talked about point towards an inflationary market in metals in general, whether critical or not, because I just don't see how it can go any other way. There isn't a surplus of any of these things, and people want them for various different reasons. As you've said, there is going to be a deficit in copper. No matter what we do, there is going to be a deficit. So therefore, when there's a deficit, prices go up. If you add a tariff onto that occasion, then prices could skyrocket. And then maybe people would stop producing the stuff because it's just too expensive to produce the stuff. I don't mean the copper, I mean the actual things that use the copper. But yeah, the story will continue, I'm sure, for the next number of years, and we will see. But I think you'll be on the right side of history here, because you've got the right projects, you're going to be producing. I mean, again, with extract, you've got a huge amount of copper, more copper than any small cap in London in terms of actual contained copper in the ground. It is vast.
Yep, and you know, I'm sort of lauded the Chinese approach to life and business and commerciality, you know, and I'm sort of getting a little bit closer than I was, but you've got the Senate Committees on Critical Metals in the US. But they talk and they talk and they talk, And I'm not seeing any real action. I'm not seeing any real action. But I'm seeing basically now when I go to the Middle East, I'm seeing those guys coming in saying, we'll build you a railway. We'll upgrade your port. We'll invest in mines. We'll consolidate mines. That's what these countries want to hear. They don't want to hear Senate committees and Senate inquiries. They don't generate copper. So, you know, now we've had a new player on the block, the Middle East. And boy, the firepower of them and their ability to act fast and sensibly, you know, they don't chuck money around. They're good businessmen. But I'm afraid, you know, putting your 30% tariff or whatever they're going to put on copper and finding yourself in the position that you ain't got any copper, so the tariff don't make a lot of sense, and yet you've stated to the rest of the globe, to the rest of the planet, that you're going to have a great manufacturing industry. There's such a disconnect there that I've got problems with it.
Yeah, you've got the likes of IRH coming into Zambia with, and hopefully doing a deal with Jubilee as well. And that, you know, we saw an announcement during the week as well about Jubilee securing more assets on the ground as well, so that they can process it. So yeah, it's a circle, and hopefully that circle will continue. Anyway, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Colin, and yeah, he has been working very hard. You can hear from his voice he's been talking a lot this last week. So anyway, thanks for your time, Colin. Any last words?
No, it's always upwards and onwards. We you know, it's nice to, you know, to sit and actually philosophize with you, Kevin, and talk about fundamentals and political activities, but our little team, and it, you know, and that little team of ours is getting pretty competent and very, very good at what they do. I'm very proud of the team I've assembled. We just get on with what we can control, Kevin, and the world will look after itself. But I think, you know, just to finally reiterate, I think Pride might look after the small mining sector. We've been ignored since 2021, totally ignored. Maybe the other day and the sun is really coming. So thank you very much for the opportunity, Kevin. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Anything else, Kev, on the radar this week that you want to talk about? There was something from Carelium, wasn't there? Do you want to just pull up the news on that and just talk us through what the findings were?
Yeah, it just provides an update of the licensing and operations in Kuhmo, Finland. The company's extended exploration licenses, including the new Kuhmo 1 reservation at Lentira, and plans further drilling on its Green Diamond discovery. I think, yeah, people have missed this. And I mean, it's absolute bargain basement price now. I think it's only worth just over £1 million. But they have a green diamond. And the green diamonds are worth anything from 3 to 6 times more than the normal diamonds. And they have the opportunity to continue to discover what's going on. They have found a green diamond already, and the finalization of the compensation that was required for the landowner is supposed to be done in the next few months as well, and then mine development can carry on. Now, I spoke with Cachel Jones, the financial director of both Conroy and Carelium Diamonds, so hopefully we're going to catch up with them on Monday, and maybe Kevin the geologist to have a chat. So watch out for that one.
That'll be a good one. And obviously they updated on the Northern Ireland project. The assessment was done by Dr. Larry Hulbert, confirmed the prospectivity. Obviously we talked about it in the past. You've been to the site, nickel, copper and the PGE.
Yeah.
And obviously they're seeking a strategic partner for a 2-year exploration program to targeting the deposits in that potential new district. So that looks very interesting, that one, as you say. I mean, it's almost like one of the most unloved ones out there, isn't it? And even Conroy as well, when you look at the pricing of Conroy of late, it's been really smashed down, hasn't it?
Well, they're both priced at the minute at shell value and not much else, which seems a bit ludicrous. But I mean, again, who are we to say that this is the market? It's not very kind at the minute, is it? The other one that had news this week, which was good news, though it didn't affect the share price in a positive manner, was Teck Minerals. It seemed to confirm that the deal was all done and they're going to receive these shares now, which, you know, unfortunately, then Critical Metals issued a fundraise at a much lower price than after the news came out. Now, they've done this before and it's recovered back to the, I think it was $5 that they raised at, and it's come back to, you know, $6, $7, $8 quite easily. I think it was trading at $8.70 when it actually happened. So it was quite a shave off that in terms of the fundraise. But the point is that they're going to have more in those shares than they are in than the full value of Teck Minerals in the market cap. Now, obviously, there is debt within Teck Minerals, and there is money owed by recyclers in Teck Minerals. So when you add it all up, Teck Minerals is worth significantly more than, especially with 48.5% of recyclers, potentially significantly more than its current market capitalization. Now, obviously, people have got to decide, but I think over the next period of time, you've got to be looking at once this money is available, they should be in a much better position cash flow wise, and therefore, get things moving. And you've got that deal with Glencore for the black mass, which should be done in the next few weeks to start, again, another revenue stream that starts coming. So I think within a few months to maybe 6 months, you've got to be getting close to them being cash flow neutral. And once they are, then I think it could be game on. It could be what everybody's been hoping for and dreaming for, that this recycling business and the ability to have this circular economy will come true.
Yeah, they've also got the site visit, haven't they, on the 27th? And I urge anyone listening who's a shareholder who hasn't been to the Wolverhampton facility to actually go and visit it, because send them the email. There's an RNS or a reach released on that explaining what you need to do to get access to the visit. Obviously, contact the company and get approval, and then Robin will show you around the facility, I believe, on the 27th of February. So you've got plenty of time to register for that one. I would recommend doing that.
Yeah, if you're a shareholder, get down there because it's definitely interesting, and it's good to see the thing in action. I think it's probably a lot more in action than it was even when we went to see it, but yeah.
Absolutely. Obviously, we saw gold hitting through that 2000. It was like 28.85 per ounce, which was great to see. Obviously, it's dropped back a bit since. Asian stock markets obviously tumbled in response to the tariffs initially, but they have bounced back somewhat. Trump signed an order to create a US sovereign wealth fund, potentially to buy assets like TikTok, showing his administration's approach to dealing with tech and foreign. And obviously, a UK, something a bit closer to home, with the Bank of England cut the interest rates by 0.25% to 4.5%, providing obviously relief for homeowners. The base rate, which influences the borrowing cost, impacts mortgages, credit cards, loans, and analysts widely expected this cut after rates were held at 4.75% in December. The move aims to manage inflation, currently at 2.5%, still above the Bank of England's 2% target, but significantly lower than its peak. Anything else you want to talk about? I think we've pretty much wrapped up what we've, what's been the wider market this week. Any podcast, TV? I'm watching some really good stuff on TV, which I'm going to go on to in a minute, but anything else you want to talk about?
Well, interest rates. Well, just going back to interest rates, before I tell you what I did watch a bit of while I was here, what do we think is going to happen with interest rates? Because there seems to be
Well,
two things. I've read people saying there's going to be at least four to five reductions this year, which would take it down to what, 3.5, 3.25, something like that. Or alternatively, there's still inflation in the system, it's coming through, and we might not, might get another cut, but that'll be that. So, what's your thoughts?
yeah, again, I've seen very different ones. I mean, I think there might be two more cuts this year, so that'd bring us down to the sort of 4% mark. I don't think we're going to see the three that you just said, like the 3.5%, until 2026. It's all down to whether they can get the inflation in under control. Do you know what I mean? Because it seems like one month or one quarter, they think that the inflation's good, it drops, and then there's only like a 0.1%, I think, was the last one we saw increase or decrease, should I say, to around the 2.1%. So I don't know. I think it's all down to how much inflation is rampant. We've seen the trade tariffs. Again, trade tariffs could be a big factor on this with the US. If they start, we've got to see what Trump does for our system, because that's going to make inflation increase, of course, if we get slapped with tariffs, because we import a lot of goods from the US.
Yeah, he seems to be making friendly overtones at the minute, but let's see what happens. And I mean, a lot of what he says doesn't come to pass anyway, so you also got to accept that a
Seven
huge
to
amount
two
of
was
it
the
is
vote.
true.
7-2 was the vote on the latest one. So what does that tell you from the Monetary Policy Committee?
Yeah, they weren't completely 100% let's cut it. So yeah, I don't know if there's a shock to the system. I think it could go either way. So it could, you could have interest rates at the same level, or you could have interest rates at possibly up to 2% lower than they are now. So it's a call, isn't it? But one of the things that the bank did do is they slashed the growth rate in half. Shock horror. Why? And they pretty much put it at Reeve's door and said, you know, because of the changes and the way that the thing has worked in terms of national insurance and all of that sort of stuff, increases, that they have cut growth in the UK by 0.75%, because it was 1.5%, it's now 0.75. That's what the bank is saying. So that really puts the Chancellor in a very bad position, because from a lending criteria, she's going to overgo, because over the limits, I should say, because she's not effectively going to be in a situation to have the tax revenue to not have to borrow.
Okay, yeah, understood. So what have you watched down there?
I was having this conversation with Charles Archer, and I said to Charles that I've never watched The Lord of the Rings.
Really?
And I actually, I basically loaded it onto my iPad, and so far I've watched the first two, and I'm about to watch the third one when I travel back on the plane.
What do you make of it?
Yeah, it's interesting, not amazing, but it's quite good.
Yeah, I remember seeing it all at the cinema. I've never revisited it, just because they're like 3 hour. They're kind of epic movies, aren't they?
They're more than 3 hours long, each
yeah,
one
exactly.
of them. And what I would say is, I think as a spectacle in the movie in the cinema, I would imagine it's much better than watching it on your iPad.
Yeah. That's massive in the cinema. So the ones I've been watching, I talked about the American Primeval last week that I watched with the missus, and it's very squeamish. So it is a very brutal series set in Utah back in sort of 1780s American Civil, you know, obviously battling the Indians and they got the Patriots. You've got effectively the army. You've even got the Mormons in there. I mean, the Mormons reveals a lot about them and the way they treated a lot of their, anybody effectively who wasn't Mormon was punished. So without saying too much, it is one of the most amazing series I've seen. Then sort of moving on from that, there was a series in 2022, which was called The English, and it was a 6-part Western drama starring Emily Blunt. She plays an English aristocrat who arrives in the American West in 1890, so set probably about 100 years on from American Primeval, and seeking revenge for her son's death. And she teams up with this kind of, he's a Pawnee ex-cavalry scout, so one of the Pawnee Indians, who's on his own mission to claim land that was promised to him from the service in the US Army. And they go on this mad, like, lawless landscape and navigating the harsh sort of backwaters and landscapes of the late 19th century American West, and they encounter some pretty interesting sort of, you know, dangers and characters along the way. So it's really, really interesting kind of story, the relationship that builds between this Emily Blunt and this you know, this effectively Chaske Spencer. And it is well worth a watch. It's on iPlayer. I think it's on Amazon Prime as well internationally, so you can it's in ultra HD, so for those who've got your big TVs that, you know, in ultra HD, it's just, some of the landscape scenes are fantastic. So that's two series, American Primeval, and when you finish that, go and revisit or visit The English, because some of the views in that are brilliant. And then for an actual series that's based on reality, there was one called Top Gun Inside the RAF that was shown on Channel 4 this week, and again, you can get that on 4 on demand. And that is a true 6-part documentary that sort of follows the escapades of two pilots, Top Guns, who are working down in off Cyprus at Akrotiri at the big air base down there, and they're launching missions into Ukraine to sort of escort some of the bigger military planes over the Ukrainian airspace, gathering intelligence. They encounter Russian MiGs and some of the sort of Su-27 aircrafts that the sort of fifth gen fighters that the Russians have, and it is just unbelievable. The footage being inside the cockpit with some of these pilots is, and what they have to go through in real war is fantastic viewing. So that's two series I'd recommend. Anything else, Kev? Sport events of the week? Anything going on? We got, obviously, I'm loving the fact that Hamilton's going to be driving Ferrari. There's a big fanfare of that. He's pictured with his Ferrari F40 in front of the Maranello, you know, with dressed up like a Don, with his, like, he almost looks like a mafia member. I don't know if you've seen the picture. It's been going around on Instagram. It's fantastic. So any sporting events you're looking forward to this week?
As I've already mentioned already, very happy to see us in the Carabao Cup.
You've got Everton this week. Derby, is it?
We've got Everton on Wednesday, I think it is. Yeah, the last derby at Goodison before they move into their new stadium. Everton are on the up after the last few results, so we'll see how that all pans out. And FA Cup weekend, isn't it? It's fourth round of the FA Cup this week. So yeah, anybody who's still in, I don't know who's still in, really, to be honest. I think we've got Plymouth, Argyle, Liverpool. I don't know who else. I don't know whether is there a
We've
main.
got Leicester, haven't we? We drew Leicester in that one.
Okay, bottom of the table clash in the FA Cup then.
I love it. Absolutely.
And so yeah, we'll see. It'll be an interesting weekend, and I think Formula One's going to be interesting, isn't it? Is the Ferrari good enough to beat Verstappen?
The Ferrari's is been getting better. I mean, is it going to be good? Is Lewis good enough now with Verstappen doing extremely well and sort of dominating it? A lot of the pundits say that Verstappen is the ultimate all-time, driver, and he will go on to be the best that's ever been. But I still think Hamilton and what he's getting a bit older now. But so I think with the right car, I'd love to see him win. I really would. With the Ferrari, because everyone said he'd never drive for Ferrari, and then when that announcement came out, it was just a game changer. So, anyway, on that note, we say thanks for listening. If you do like what you've heard, please do subscribe and hit the bell icon.
Thanks for listening, guys, and press that button on YouTube and or Audio Boom, wherever you listen to it, to get anything that's coming, whether it's a midweek or it's a Sunday roast. And yeah, thanks again for your support and listening.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.